Welcome to Generation Dry. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Leah. Let's jump in.
All right, guys. Today we have a special guest. You may know her as former co-host with me on my old podcast, The Dry Life, Beth Bowen.
Hello. It's good to be in the podcasting seat with you again.
Yes. It feels like we were just here. But for those who don't know you, although I think most of our listeners do, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and then we can kind of jump in.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Beth Bowen. I live outside the Austin, Texas area. I'm a therapist by trade. So that was kind of my entry into the mental health field. But then I had my own experience with addiction, alcohol use disorder, and I'm now about to celebrate 5 years sober at the end of the month. And now I work with women who are looking to change their relationship with alcohol, who are looking to quit drinking, who might not normally fit into kind of more of the traditional models of recovery. They don't really identify as an alcoholic. They don't necessarily want to go to AA, but they have identified that alcohol is not working for them. So I work with them on a one-on-one capacity or in group programs. And we really work on like building a version of this that feels really good, kind of like you and I have done over the years. I also have a podcast, Sober Stories, where we really focus on the storytelling aspect of this, the shared stories we have, the way that hearing ourselves in somebody else's story can open a door for change and give us the language, the vision, the acceptance to be able to change our own lives. So that is kind of my little passion project, my little baby. Outside of work, I'm a mom of two boys. I have a foster dog or a rescue dog. I like to hike, all the things, yada yada.
Yes. So I feel like we've interviewed each other a million times, so I don't want this to be like the same
so many times.
The same thing over and over. Yeah. And I don't know, is this your first time meeting Leah officially?
No, Leah and I have actually done an interview together too.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Awesome. But something I wanted to bring up, Beth and I were talking about it before, was 'tis the season, you know, September, although nothing's happening this month, it's kind of like the warm up preparation month right before we hop into the holidays, which are extremely stressful, triggering, like for me, ritual breaking times. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of traveling, you're going places or having people at your house. You know, there's way more parties and socializing. And I think it can be a really rocky time for people in recovery, people with mental health in general. And then especially if you're looking and sober curious and, you know, I'd say starting now and getting a head start mm-hmm. is the time.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. And you're spot on with this fact that, you know, we're stepping into it. We're not quite there yet, but I think people are thinking about it. I think people are thinking about the changing seasons. I am a big believer in being seasonal and living seasonal and really focusing on the different personalities, if you will, of each season and kind of planning on my life accordingly. So for me, that means spring is, you know, coming out of hibernation, starting to explore more, getting creative, doing new things. Summer is very adventurous. It's more play, less work. And fall, I think, becomes more of this inward contemplative time as we start to, whether or not people do this on purpose or not, you know, I think we really start to hibernate. We start to settle mm-hmm. in for the cold months and we start to get cozy and we're making soup and I'm still like 95 degrees here, but I've already started making soup because I'm ready for it. But when we start to get into these months, I think we get really reflective. So we start to think about what has worked for us this year and what hasn't. And I think that mm-hmm. that's when a lot of people start to say, you know what? Alcohol's still not working for me. I've found myself in September of 2022 and I thought it was gonna be different and it's still not working. So I think we have people on that spectrum who are realizing like, this just, I'm done with this. I'm over this. This is unsatisfactory. I want 2023 to start I want it to be different. And we're starting to kind of think ahead as well. And then, like you said, for people who are already in recovery, who are already sober, who are maintaining this sobriety or alcohol-free life, we're stepping into kind of a season of stress. So I see it from both sides. I see it from the people who are thinking about changing the relationship with alcohol, but also those of us who have already done it and how we kind of bolster that up so that we can maintain. And, you know, I like to say that there's really no good time to quit drinking. If we're looking for a good time, you're going to keep drinking forever. There's always another holiday. There's always another birthday on the horizon. So I think that there's this sense of like, well, it's already September, heading into the holidays, screw it. I'm just going to keep drinking for the rest of 2022. And then I'll figure it out in January. And my answer to that is, like, I think this is actually a great time to reevaluate your relationship with alcohol, or to really dig in if you're already alcohol free, because we're about to head into a really stressful, objectively stressful, even if it's good stress, a very stressful season. And I think that, I mean, if we know physiologically, alcohol is only going to worsen that. Alcohol is only going to make it feel worse. So I think it's actually a really great time to start thinking about this and to start paying attention, even though it's just September.
And I mean, clinically speaking, from both of you, I think a lot of us that struggle with mental health disorders, like, I know that the seasons affect that. I mean, there's obviously like seasonal affect disorder, but I just notice, like, now that I'm in Ohio for the time being versus being in like Southern California, where there's like no change, like Leah knows, like it's the same all the time, which also sometimes I think negatively impacts me. But now that I'm in a place that's actually changing, like you said, I can feel myself kind of going out a little less, getting a little bit more cozy, and sleeping more. And I think I have to watch for that. I think just in general, like, we talked about this way back with like having a prevention plan, and I kind of call it like the prelapse for myself, whether it's like drinking, using, going back into just like old negative behaviors. But one of those things I noticed about myself recently was like sleeping in and like hitting my alarm a lot, or like canceling plans, or kind of like moving things around, and just feeling like a general sense of being overwhelmed. And not to say you can't have a couple days like that, right? But I think when it becomes a pattern of behavior and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, that's not good.
Yeah, I was just about to say, even without the changing weather, because I'm in Texas, it really hasn't changed yet. It's not a bazillion degrees, but it's still quite warm. But I think too, if you think about the end of the seasons, I think about how ready we always are for the next season. By the end of it, we're like, I'm over summer, I'm done with it, I'm ready to move on. And for me, I know I have like a massive amount of like summer burnout. We traveled a ton, my kids were home from school, like I was off my schedule, I worked too much. I'm back in therapy because I'm just tired, I'm exhausted. And so yeah, I think even if you're not feeling this, the temperature change, like we can just be tired from the season that we've been running through for however long we've been in it.
And then I want to add the family dynamics that come into play with the holidays. Like not so much maybe Halloween for some folks with like extended families, but maybe, right? Mm-hmm. And just Halloween, and then we have Thanksgiving, and then we just kind of continue to dive into this holiday season. And for a lot of people, that is extremely upsetting and stressful. And even if it's a great thing, it's also, on the other hand, can bring up a lot of like feelings that have been, what's the word I'm looking for? Like latent for a while. And so I feel like I do a lot of prep work with clients about what do we do as the holidays are approaching, and what do we do as we're making plans with family, and can I avoid these situations? I mean, too, if you're exploring sobriety or you are in some fashion sober, some families aren't into that. And there's a lot of peer pressure and questioning, and it's makes for a fun time for a lot of people.
Well, I think too, with family, You know, I think you're right. Cause even if it's a good interaction, even if you're like, I love my family, we get along great, there's an energy burn that comes with being around, being outside of your routine, being with new people, being in like the kind of people that you can't just walk around with your tits out. Like there's a significant energy burn that you have with different, sorry if I just can't say that on your podcast, but here we are.
You can say anything.
Okay, great. Kayla knows that. You gotta watch what you get from me. But when we're with people, even if it's good, we're still burning energy that we weren't burning before.
Yeah.
So when we step into family interactions, that even if they're great, even if they're lovely, we're still doing life differently than we normally are. We are out of our routine. We are in potentially a different environment. We're surrounding ourselves with different people. We're acting differently, even if it's small and you're with people you love. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think sometimes people can say like, oh no, I can't wait for the holidays. My family's great. It'll be great, blah, blah, blah. But then they still find themselves stressed. Because if we think about like stress, stress doesn't necessarily have a negative connotation. Stress can be a physiological experience. Mm-hmm. And when we are in an unusual environment, doing unusual things with unusual people, even if they're people we love, we are putting a toll. We are taking a tax on our system. We are stressing the system, which leaves us more vulnerable to using a substance like alcohol to cope with it.
Well, and just thinking of people's anxiety natural, like I'm just thinking of even my own mom, like over the holidays preparing for something, it's exciting, but there's a level of anxiety. So then you kind of can naturally take that on without even knowing. So, cause even if it's a good time, there's this palpable anxiety or kind of nervousness that can take over, and not in a bad way even, but like, right. Like we take on other people's energies. And so it can be something that's a little bit less conscious, like we're in like it goes beyond our awareness sometimes.
Yeah, I think I will always remember, and I picture it at my parents' house, but years and years ago Holly Whitaker talked about how she was like at a Christmas dinner with her family, and she like got up from the table and went upstairs and did yoga because she was like, otherwise I'm gonna drink. And I can picture like her doing yoga at my parents' house because that's what I envisioned it when I was reading this. But like it just goes to show that even if it's a good interaction, it's still wearing you out.
Yeah, our family members can have the biggest hearts and mean, you know, their intentions can be so pure, but it can still take a toll on our mental health and just our ability to self-regulate. Yeah,
totally.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've been experiencing that already, and it's not, well, because, you know, I'm here staying with my parents, A, and then B, a lot of immediate family lives around here. So I'm not used to that. You know, I'm used to maybe seeing family a couple times a year. And even before that, as I was growing up, that was just my interaction. I lived overseas most of the time. So I'm not, you know, this person who got to grow up around a lot of family. And so here it's different. You know, we'll go to my grandma's like every weekend, or we'll have family over. And I remember a couple weeks ago, we had like my aunt and uncle over, and my cousin and my grandma and my aunt. And it wasn't even, like you said, it was not like in something that would seem overstimulating. Like we just had like a very casual dinner and then played cards, but I had already had like a long day in my mind and I hadn't really recharged. And by 8 p.m. they had left, and I swear to God, I thought I was gonna like break. My anxiety was so high, and it's like, you know, not even that I wanted to drink, or, you know, my aunt and uncle don't drink either. So it's not that, you know, everybody was drinking or that I was feeling triggered or anything, but I think I've learned in my personal recovery that I'm somebody who kind of, it sounds like Holly, like I need to take almost like recharging moments. Like if I was an iPhone, you know, and it can be like, it doesn't matter who you are. Like you could be my, you know, significant other, you could be my family, you could be a stranger, but I have like limited energy capacity. And I've learned now how to delegate it better, I think, through recovery. And then, but like that day, I just, you know, I didn't, when I should have stepped away for a moment, you know, and done a meditation or used something for my toolbox. And I felt it too. And I was going over to somebody's house afterwards, and I was like, I already know, I can feel the panic attack. It hasn't happened yet, but it's going to. And it did. Like I just knew, and maybe I manifested it, but I was just so, and thankfully I got out of my car at this random church and was just walking around the parking lot, like walking it off. But it was for me a good lesson and a good reminder that it doesn't matter how, like you said, fun or, you know, you stressful the situation could be, if you know yourself and you know, hey, I need to take a step outside, I need to leave early, or maybe I need to come late. Or like for me, you know, the event was happening at my house. So yeah, go upstairs and say, hey, I'm not feeling well, I'm going to just take a little nap and then I'll be back down. It's kind of like, don't have any shame with that. Like, it's totally okay to, you know, listen to your body, or, you know, listen to whatever's coming up for you, and explore that. Cause I think sometimes we try to push ourselves and it's not a good idea.
I think the iPhone analogy is exactly right. So the way I teach this concept, I teach a concept of energy management to my clients. We call it the body battery.
Oh, I like that.
And I truly want people to conceptualize it as a battery, because I think that gives us this visual representation. And our mental, physical, and emotional energy is finite. It is something that requires being charged regularly enough to be able to be charged and well cared for enough to maintain ourselves. So when we start to get depleted, when we start to be on low battery mode, that's when we start to get panicky, angsty, like worn out, have to go to sleep, have to go drink a bottle of wine to regulate. We have to self-soothe in some way. And so when I think about the body battery, I'm like, all right, what drains my body battery first? What are my energy leaks? What am I using my energy, both mental, emotional, or physical, on that is reducing my battery by however much percent? And what juices it back up? What are the things that re-energize me, add more to my battery? And getting like this really tangible, concrete visualization of my energy. What this does is, I know when I'm like at 60% throughout the day, like I'm tiptoeing into the danger zone of burnout, of having to regulate with something, of having to lose my shit on my family, whatever it is. And so I have to do something to recharge, whether that's sleep, whether that's calling a best friend, whether that is numbing out to something for a minute, TikTok, whatever it is. So when we start to be able to tune this body battery, it gives us the ability to regulate in better ways. And I think about it, just the other day, my mother-in-law lives across the street. Fun story. My mother-in-law lives across the street and we do Sunday dinners, and every Sunday it's either at her house or our house. And this Sunday, my husband wanted to go grill at his mom's house and we were going to take the boys. The boys were sick. I was sick. We're all sick. And I was like, can we just do it at our house? Can we just grill in our backyard, like eat in the backyard? I don't want to have to clean the house. Even if your mom says that I don't have to, I'm going to feel like I have to clean the house, but let's just do it in the backyard. Max is sick. Like, he's going to want to lay in bed while we're cooking. Like, let's just do it in the backyard. And he's like, well, what's the difference? It's literally crossing the street. I'm like, yeah, but that's still 2% more, 5% more energy that I'd be burning by packing the boys up with all their stuff, because my kid's still potty training, walking across the street, having my sick kid in a house that's not my own house, while we're cooking in a kitchen that's not my own kitchen, in like a space that's not my own. Like, that's still more of an energy burn than I can get right now. I'm not going to cancel Sunday dinner on us, but I know that I want to preserve my energy where I can. So identifying that, hey, even if this is a small leak, I don't have enough to give. I'm already sick. I'm already tired. I don't have enough to give that extra 5% to walk across the street. Here's what we can do instead. I think it starts to give us the language of like, oh, when I leave to go do the yoga in the middle of Christmas dinner, that's not being that's not me being selfish. That's me charging my body battery so that I can go back to Christmas dinner and actually be there as a human being. Oh, dog's coming in. Sorry.
Something I was thinking too, when you were talking about the body battery, is our diet. And I'm not a nutritionist,
yes,
but around the holidays, like think about all the candy in October and then you're just eating sweets. And when it's colder, we're just eating and we're like, I mean, it all makes sense, right? And it's enjoyable. But I know for me, when I just eat sugar, when I just have carbs, I mean, mm-hmm. most of us, not just me, I crash and I can mm-hmm. feel it. And I feel more anxious. I feel more lethargic. I don't have the ability to engage with people in like a really, like, I'm just not present. Like cognitively, I struggle when I'm eating the shit all the time. So around the holidays too, if you think about that, like just even that, those meals that are just so, or you're just snacking and grazing, and usually we're all bringing just junk because it's fun. And I love that. Like I enjoy that very much, but I do know for me, I have to find a way to have a more balanced diet around the holidays. Like even maybe not on Christmas Eve, maybe not on Thanksgiving, but really like be mindful about that because it's really hard. Like we're talking about getting out of routine, but it's really hard, especially with food. And yeah. Again, not even body. It's just like literally just what you put in your body mm-hmm. and how it manifests and makes cravings. And I mean, it just creates this whole imbalance when you're usually maybe a little bit more balanced.
Well, and we know that having blood sugar crashes can lead to cravings for alcohol, you know, and Kayla mm-hmm. and I have talked a lot about food and eating, and both of us have backgrounds with that. And I know that there's a lot of connection between eating disorders and the substance use community because yep. they are very similar mechanisms. So I'm always really careful when I talk about that, but you're completely right. Like nutrition, what we are putting in our bodies is really important and can be really supportive. Right. So for me, rather than thinking about it from a standpoint of like, oh, I shouldn't eat the Christmas cookies because it's going to make right. me fat. It's like, is this in service of my body battery? Is mm-hmm. this nourishing? Is this fueling? Is this like really reframing the wording right. around it rather than is this healthy or is this totally. Like whatever loaded words that are coming up for people? Like, I think we can reframe it and use it to our benefit because for me, sometimes the thing that's really nourishing is like the comfort food. It is nourishing in that yeah. moment. And sometimes the thing that feels really nourishing is like the balanced, healthy, quote unquote, healthy meal. And so, yeah, absolutely. Food is switching it to more of like a fuel kind right. of thought pattern or something that supports you, that is nutritious, is right. nourishing, I think can be really useful. And it's absolutely part of the body battery.
Yeah.
I think you both bring up a really great point because we had been talking a lot about eating disorders on Soberish and just like you said, the parallels, and there's mm-hmm. such a high number of people who suffer with both, myself included. Yeah. And I was just talking about this, like overexercising and then overeating, or for me, like I have orthorexia, which is I think like a less common eating disorder. And for anybody who doesn't know, it's this obsession with eating healthy. And then when I don't, I feel like I need to punish myself by exercising more or not eating, potentially purging. But for me, that's not usually the case. But the holidays now, I noticed it's almost, you know, it's like the transfer addiction. So mm-hmm. if something doesn't make me want to go have a drink, sometimes I find I'm like, I really want a cigarette, which is strange because I've never been a smoker. I think it's just that, you know, like I need something, I need to be doing something or I need to be consuming something or food. And then to Leah's point, I get off balance because I kind of get in the same mindset as like the fuck it's right. Like when, mm-hmm. with the drinking cycle or with the eating cycle where I'm eating good and then I'm eating bad and then I'm not eating at all. And it's so hard to find a balance, even just like short trips. Cause that's like, I think a big part of this season, or like, for instance, I'm going to be taking a work trip next week and it's only 3 days, but 3 days is enough, right? To like totally mess up your routine. And so I do small things like, am I really going to be drinking? Very doubtful, right? Like, it's a work trip. I'm now working again with another, like, you know, harm reduction, alcohol free company. So, but one of the things I do, even in 6 years of recovery, like I always ask the hotel, like to take any booze out of the room. Mm-hmm. Like it's extra temptation. I just don't need, because like you said, God forbid I'm in that burnout mode. I'm in that place. And there's just something in me that says fuck it, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. all it's there. So taking that away. And like you said, it's one extra thing for me to have to get on some clothes, go to the elevator, go downstairs, go to the bar. I'm not going to make that extra effort. Whereas if it's already available to me and the only thing I need to do is open up a mini fridge, more likely that I'm going to do that. So I think
people ask me if I ever get cravings for alcohol anymore. And like I said, I'll be 5 years, September 29th. And I don't get cravings for alcohol, but that doesn't mean that I don't get cravings for something else. Like I still get that state of, I need to get outside myself right now. I need to change something right now. Something needs to go away. I need to make this feeling stop. I need to make it shift. I need to make it change. And like, I have learned my warning signs, and I've learned what those transfer addictions are. For me, it's sugar and like mind numbing iPhone games. I cannot download Candy Crush or Tetris because I will spend my entire life on those, just completely numbing out. And so, you know, I think that the thing that's really important with that is like the feeling doesn't change. The need to get outside yourself to regulate your system really immediately doesn't change. So what I take from that is like, okay, then that means I have to be really, really preventative. I have to be really thoughtful before I ever get to that state. Of course, I need to know what I need to do when I'm there. So when I'm freaking out, when I have that emergency feeling, when I need to get outside myself, I've got my toolkit. But more than that, what am I doing beforehand to make sure I never get there? And so it's funny because people are always surprised when they work with me and I'm like, tell me about your laundry system. Like, what are you talking about? Like, no, like, tell me, do you have like six baskets of laundry staring at you right now that are stressing you out? Because that is impacting your ability to quit drinking. And all of these little pieces that are part of just our day to day and part of our stress and our expectations and all the things we say yes to, that matters just as much for our ability to not have to numb out as like what we do in the moment when we have a drink in front of us.
I think what's hard is that intentionality for some people feels so incredibly overwhelming because they're like, I already have a shit ton of stuff that I have to do. And now you're telling me that I need to put my, like, for example, I'm just saying like, put my sneakers on in my, or put them in the car. So after work and go on a walk, like, and they don't say it, but it's kind of like, it just feels so overwhelming, but we just, it's kind of that. Okay, but is this, yes, it takes a little bit more effort and a little bit more thoughtfulness, but long term, this is better than you running to grab a drink right after work, or like, this is good, like just like short term versus long term. And I think those extra steps seem so incredibly overwhelming when you have so much on your plate, whether it's like just a lot of work, you have a family, you have other responsibilities, and then you ask someone to, so it's really just that kind of motivational interviewing where it's just, okay, this does feel like a lot, but let's do. And then I think kind of like the toolkit, it's like creating your environment to remind you of those things you need. So like, I will, like, you know, people put their like sneakers by the door. This is an example, or just even at work, like they'll have like their little incense. Like, it's just like, I know it's like, it's one of those things where they're like, oh, but then I have to like buy it. And I'm like, okay, well, just like, what can you do? It just, it feels, I think, incredibly overwhelming, but it's so worth it in the long term to just be intentional. And it's going to, the pros are going to outweigh the cons, but I do know that can feel so incredibly overwhelming, especially if you have anxiety, especially if you're already dealing with all these other things. So it's, but it does, it's just a matter of like really being forthcoming with, or not forthcoming, forthright with all those things. I don't know.
I think you can also shift priorities too. So if you're feeling really overwhelmed by the thought of adding on new rituals, new things in your life that are going to support you being alcohol free, what else can you let go of? What else can you, I interviewed Amanda White on my podcast, Therapy for Women. And she talked about glass versus plastic balls. When she's juggling all these balls, she's like, okay, what is plastic? It can be dropped and it'll bounce and it won't break. And what is glass? If I drop this ball, it's going to shatter and it's irreparable. So when we think about like, okay, if I'm trying to build this new habit, if I'm trying to do this new thing, if I'm trying to stop drinking, whatever it is, I've got all these balls in the air. The not drinking one is the glass ball. The not drinking one, like that's the main focus right now. That's what I want to do. What else can I let go of? Oh, I can like lessen up on my housework or whatever. I can delegate this, or I can outsource this, or I can decide that now is not the time that I'm going to remodel my house or whatever it is that we're doing. Because yes, it can be overwhelming. And I think also
life-saving.
Also subtract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That, I love that analogy. It reminds me of this book I'm reading called Essentialism, which I don't know if you guys have read, but it's basically, you know, what the title says. It's how do you create, and it's interesting too, like one of the things that they reminded us of is like the word priority is not meant to be plural. It's meant to be singular, and yet we've created priorities, right? Like that system of, I think for those of us in recovery, like that's your priority one. Everything else comes after that, because I know for me, in order to stay in my recovery, everything else has to come afterwards. I have to maintain this, then I can prioritize other things afterwards. But yeah, it's hard. Absolutely. But I think it's hard when you're like, if you're a perfectionist or like somebody who in their mind, and I think this is a lot of us, especially like the American culture and the mindset is like, do more, you should be doing more. Productivity is really the sign of success. You know, how much did you get done this today? How much did you get done this week, this year even, right? Like, because as we come up, it seems like September, but we're going to blink and it's going to be, you know, New Year's Eve. And it kind of, you know, you mark off like, well, what did I do this year? Like, what did I accomplish? You know, what am I going to accomplish next year? And I think it's also shifting that. That was something I did too, right when I got here to Ohio. I was like creating all of these things I needed to do. I was like, I need to quit my job. I need to find a new job. I'm going to become a yoga instructor. And then I was like, well, I like Spank, and now I'm going to become a Spank instructor. And all of a sudden, the like, everything just like smashed in on me. And I found this book literally, which I was watching Southern Charm. And one of the characters on this reality show mentioned it. I was like, maybe I'll just check it out. And within reading like the first three chapters, I was like, I'm dropping this. Like, I'm not doing this. But it was in my mind, as somebody who thinks that way, I had valued it because I had already put in 9 hours of online training. I hadn't done anything in person yet, but in my mind, I was like, well, it's already up on my goal board and I already have put in 9 hours of work. So I just cannot not do it. And then but the minute I said to myself out loud, like, I'm not going to do it, I felt like such relief, because like you had said, Beth, in the end, for me, what I'm prioritizing now, right? I kind of break it down into like my personal life, my professional life, and my financial life currently. So the goals are things I want to accomplish for me, like in this year. Becoming a Spanga instructor does not get me closer to any of them. And so that was how I kind of identified it as the glass or the plastic ball rather than the glass ball. It's something I could totally come back to or whatever, but my therapy that I'm doing right now, you know, the exposure therapy, the EMDR therapy, working a new job, doing all of my other self-care practices, like those are non-negotiable glass balls that have to be. And so just as like a resource, I think that book has been really helpful to me, and just thinking about it in that way of, and the same thing with drinking. And I know we've talked about this before. It's like, is drinking going to get you closer to whatever goals you have in your relationship, in your job, in your internal, you know, interpersonal life, in your spiritual life, or is it blockading? And I'm going to guess that it's blockading. I can't even think of one thing that it's going to get you closer to. Maybe jail.
I could talk about productivity and this forever. Like, that has been something I've really deconstructed in myself over the last several years, and it's still a work in progress. I have a working theory about eldest daughter's and alcohol use disorder, because I know so many eldest daughters who find that they're like high achieving and they get all the straight A's and all the teachers love them and they're a pleasure to have in class, and they probably have ADHD that's undiagnosed, and then they find themselves in their 30s with a drinking problem because of all of this identity that we've wrapped up in productivity and our worth and our value as producers and all of the, I have a whole working theory, so we could do a whole different podcast episode about that. But I think I like as even as we talk about seasonality, we're talking about heading into the fall months and what we do if we are quitting drinking or if we are already sober. And I think like this glass balls analogy is going to be useful. Like I'm thinking about like, okay, fall travel or holidays, and like, okay, what do I, and I already had started thinking about this in my work of like, next year I'm taking all of December off because I can't like work through December. So what are the glass balls and what are the plastic balls we're heading into the holidays?
Mm-hmm. I even think this is where people have a really hard time setting a boundary of not going to a certain event or not showing up. Like, you know, say they have two set of households, like parents, it's like, really being, I think there's a lot of pressure to not hurt feelings and to see everyone, to do everything and to be everyone for be everything for everyone. And so I'll talk a lot too in session about how can we acknowledge that there's a need for a boundary, communicate that, and also cope with the response from the people that we are setting that boundary with, because there's so much resistance to that. Like, I always do it, so I have to do it. Like, I hear that all the time. Like, I always go to, like, you know, this sibling's like event, but it drives them insane and it causes like, you know, like crippling anxiety. And so it's what, okay. And so it's even, it's not like, and it's not about not going or having, but I think it's, can't you go for an hour? Like, just even new ideas of or concepts like that, like, can't you go for an hour? And usually like that idea just sounds so great and liberating that even that can reduce so much anxiety or stress. So even becoming more aware of what your limits are and how can you take something off the plate. But I know that's hard for a lot of people, especially because of traditions and family dynamics and pressures. And if you have a partner and have to see their family, like there's a lot that comes with it. But I also think it's kind of like, yeah, if this is going to put you on the verge of a breakdown or of using or drinking, or you know what I mean, just going back to square one, why not? And I think it's just hard, those conversations. I know we talked about this too, but Melissa Urban. Mm-hmm. That book is so wonderful how it describes boundaries, and I really love it. And I just want everyone to read it because it's so perfectly said, and you have a little bit more self-compassion about boundaries when you read it.
How do you advise people to navigate the responses? I'm curious. Like, I'm thinking about my own self.
Well, so, I mean, for me, well, I think it's just, when you go back to what is your expectation from the boundary? And I think a lot of people want the other person or family member or whatever to be like, okay, I understand. And if the expectation is that someone will be receptive and understand and give you permission, that's just going to lead to a lot of letdown and panic when they don't provide that response. Mm-hmm. So we talk a lot about with clients, it's like, okay, you're going to have to tolerate the possibility that there'll be pushback and there will be protesting. And so really it's a self-talk through. So I think it's manage your expectations. So if you're like, yes, it'd be great in the perfect world for your parent to be like, it's okay, you don't have to come like fly out here this year. Like realistically, if that's what you do every single year, there's going to be, it's going to be a shock to their system and they're not going to love that. So really it's just a matter of, okay, knowing that, showing empathy and knowing you still have every right to preserve that boundary and set that boundary despite the pushback or protesting, guilt, and knowing that it's self-preservation versus selfishness. And that's something I really just emphasize. And I think it's hard. It's easy to lose sight of it, especially that, you know, these dynamics and families have this status quo. Like there are these dynamics that exist for years and years and years and years and years. And so once you challenge the status quo, there's going to be upset. That's just, it's just, And even if it's not someone yelling, you'll see disappointment. A parent could get tearful. Like it's unfortunately, there's going to be some reaction. So it's managing your own response to the reaction and knowing you still have every right to set the boundary. There's really no perfect way to do it, but I really think it's just a matter of managing the expectations, because I do think people have this expectation that if I say it just the right way and I tell them I care and like I, you know, have this great excuse, that they will be receptive. And especially in this deep-rooted family dynamics, there will not be receptivity. That's what I was looking for. Like, it's receptivity.
Reception. You know? I don't know. Now I'm questioning it too.
I think it's receptivity. Receptive. Is that a thing? Anyways.
Reciprocity.
Yes. So I think that's like what I talk about. I mean, so I gave this example. I've set boundaries with my parents a few years ago, and my dad was very receptive. My mom, I think, was hurt, and I had to like sit through that. And that was crappy to know that another parent, like I hurt my parent, that their feelings were hurt because of this boundary. That was really shitty and I didn't enjoy it. But at the end of the day, I needed that. And I don't know. So there's really no magic wand for that. But I think it's managing the expectations and self-talk and reminding yourself you're deserving of this boundary, of this limit.
I think it's so important to hear a therapist say that they set a boundary and it wasn't received well, and that was uncomfortable. Like you immediately brought me back to like setting a boundary with my somebody in my front seat of my car, and it didn't feel good. It didn't, but like it was an important boundary to set, and things have changed since then. I think that's a really good point. Like it doesn't necessarily have to feel good right away, but can be really, I like to frame boundaries too as loving boundaries with my clients. Like a boundary can be very loving for both parties, even if it feels uncomfortable when it's set.
And Melissa Urban, she talks about like, it's kind, it's actually kind. It's kind versus you having resentment, going to an event, being miserable, or just the whole time being in panic and shutting down, not engaging, right? So there's also this kindness that comes with setting a boundary, because you're, by putting your needs first and acknowledging that this isn't good for you, you're not going to put yourself in this space where you're maybe closer to conflict or there's going to be hostility. And so I think there's a lot of kindness with boundaries that maybe people don't understand initially, but I agree. Yeah.
So Beth, as we wrap up, if you could give someone sober curious or kind of, you know, in the beginning of their journey, advice about going into the holidays, what would kind of be something you would tell them that they could foundationally start creating that toolkit that we talk so much about?
Yeah. I mean, my first thing that I would say to them is that this is the perfect time to quit drinking. This is the perfect time, because you are going to give yourself better rest, better sleep. Your nervous system is going to be better regulated. There are going to be so many things that not drinking is going to do to support you through the holidays that it's the perfect time to stop drinking. Because I think we can really talk ourselves out of it. We can say, oh, but Halloween's coming up and then Thanksgiving and yada, yada, yada. It feels like it might not be a good time, but it's the perfect time because it's going to be so supportive through the holidays. And then, I mean, I just posted a reel about this today, but if I'm thinking about like toolkit and I'm thinking about what is actually useful for us when we are in that panic moment and we're in stress, I keep it super simple. I want you to take 5 deep breaths. If I'm thinking about nervous system regulation, we can see all sorts of fancy options out there. Like Wim Hof's real popular right now, cold therapy. Like there's so many different things you can do to manage your nervous system. And those are great and fine, but those are not very portable. Those are not super, you got to practice them. You got to learn how to do them. They're not super accessible. They are harder to think of when you're in crisis. So I tell folks, you know, if you're feeling really stressed, I want you to stop and take 5 deep breaths. 5 deep breaths are still one of the most potent nervous system regulators that we can use. And it's a really great portable tool that we can take anywhere with us, do anywhere. And then I guess the third thing I would say is like really hone in on this body battery idea, like really start to understand where your energy leaks are and how that energy is costing you and what it is making you physically incapable of doing, and how you can really care for that body battery so that you can sustain. Like, this is a marathon season. We are sustaining this over the long haul. We are not burning through our energy at Halloween and then being completely wiped out for the rest of the year.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. So
what you're saying is I cannot take an ice bath with me everywhere I go, but I do take an ice pack.
You can. Yes,
I like that you say that, because we need to keep it simple, really. Yeah. Like, I'm so over like all these things that we're supposed to do as self-care, and you're like, I don't have the funds or resources or the time or energy.
And yeah. I think that's like advanced, that's like boss level stuff, that's like advanced stuff. Just keep it simple at first.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Well, Beth, thank you so much for being on. We will put all of your information in our description. And as usual, it's so good to talk to you.
You too, my friend. Always good to catch up.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Generation Dry, a podcast for the sober and sober curious. If you like what you've been listening to, make sure to subscribe and leave us a review. For more information about this episode, you can check out the description. And for more techniques and tips, make sure to follow us on Instagram @GenerationDryPod. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys next week.